This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're going to learn about a new disease facing some palm trees here in Florida. It's called lethal bronzing. Researchers say home and business owners should be treating their palms with antibiotics to help limit its spread. We'll find out more about that. Plus, we're sitting down with historian Jim Powers from the IMAG History and Science Center to find out how Fort Myers got its name, the City of Palms, and where the miles of royal palm trees lining McGregor Boulevard fits into that story. But first, citrus greening is a disease caused by a bacterium that's spread by a small insect called an Asian citrus psyllid. It first turned up here in Florida in 2005, and since then, it's had major impacts on the state's citrus industry, reducing production numbers by more than half since it first arrived. Researchers estimate that more than 75% of citrus trees in the state are infected. During this year's legislative session, Florida lawmakers approved funding for a dozen projects that are looking for short and long-term solutions that growers might be able to use to grow bigger fruit, reduce production costs, and produce more resistant trees. Joining me now is Dr. Michael Rogers. He's statewide director of citrus programs and director of the Citrus Research and Education Center in Lake Alfred, Florida. Dr. Rogers, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Julie.
And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. The number to give us a call at is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And on Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, you can find us at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So what is the current estimate of how much citrus greening has reduced production in Florida? Are we still at 75%?
Yeah, I think that's an accurate assessment. We've seen the crop drop dramatically year after year since greening first showed up in 2005. I think a lot of us were very optimistic this year we were going to see an increase in yields, but Hurricane Irma, that really changed the outlook once we got through Irma, and we saw all the devastation in Southwest Florida in particular with all the fruit on the ground and the damage to the groves. So
sure did, and it also knocked over a lot of trees that were already weakened.
Yes, and so hopefully we can avoid hurricanes this year. I think growers are optimistic. They're seeing improvements in their groves. And so hopefully this will be a much better year than last year.
Well, that's some good news. I mean, were you working in citrus when this first came to the scene? I mean, what were things like before citrus greening?
Yes, I joined UF IFAS as a faculty member in entomology back in 2004. So I had probably about a year under my belt before greening showed up. And so things have changed dramatically because the pest of the day back in the early 2000s, we were concerned about things like Diapreppes root weevil. We had issues with canker, which is still out there. And then also labor issues were obviously a big thing. We're talking a lot about mechanical harvesting back in the early 2000s, trying to find ways to harvest fruit because of labor shortages. So things have changed a lot since then because now with greening present in Florida, we're really focused on citrus greening or HLB as our main focus for everything we're doing right now.
Yeah, HLB, that's the shorthand version of Huanglongbing. That's the name of the bug?
Huanglongbing is the Chinese name. That means yellow shoot disease.
Okay.
And that was the name first given this disease, almost 100 years ago in China.
So can you remind our listeners exactly how citrus greening does affect the citrus trees? We know it's the HLB that causes it, but what does it do to the tree?
Okay, so as you mentioned earlier, the Asian citrus psyllid, that's a bug that spreads the bacterium that causes citrus greening disease. So when the psyllids feed on the citrus trees, it injects the bacteria into the plant. That bacteria moves in the plant down to the root system, and it actually kills off probably 30 or 40% of the roots before you even begin to see the first above-ground symptoms. So you actually have a lot of damage done to the tree before you even know that it has the disease. And from that point, the trees aren't able to take up water and nutrients like they need to grow and produce fruit. And so you see the trees start to gradually decline over time. They begin to look weak, and then you start to get the reductions in fruit.
Yeah, they kind of get a little lopsided and not evenly ripening.
Yes, and late in the season, when you have a heavy crop of fruit on the trees and you think that you're going to probably have a lot of fruit to harvest, about a month before harvest, that root system can't support the heavy fruit load, so you start to see the fruit dropping out of the trees. And that's really a kick in the gut to growers after you spend all this money to grow that crop and then have 40, 50% of it hit the ground before you're able to harvest it.
So does this affect all types of citrus from the kumquat all the way up to the pomelo?
All citrus varieties are affected. Some are affected more severely than others. Unfortunately, the main varieties we grow here in Florida that we depend on, things like Valencia and Hamlin for our juice production, are very severely affected. We have some newer varieties that are probably more fresh fruit varieties that have been developed by IFAS that are less affected. But again, you know, Florida is a juice industry. You know, 95% of our fruit goes to juice.
Yeah.
And so that really hits home when we can't keep these trees productive for orange juice production.
And now, does this also impact trees, citrus trees in other parts of the world, California, Asia?
Yes, especially in the East and Asia, China, India, those countries, they've dealt with greening for a long time, over 100 years. Greening showed up in the Western Hemisphere for the first time in 2004 in Brazil, and then we found it in Florida in 2005. Since it spread in the U.S. To all the citrus-growing states, now California, they've not found citrus greening disease yet in their commercial groves, but it is widespread throughout the urban environment, in dooryard trees, backyards, throughout California.
Really?
So it's just a matter of time before the commercial citrus groves in California are going to be facing the same thing we are here in Florida.
That surprises me. It's just kind of in the backyard groves as opposed to in the big grove. I mean, the backyard, you know, ornamental plants and maybe individual trees and not in the big groves.
Yeah, it's just distribution of the trees in California. The disease has moved up from Mexico, and so it's moved through the San Diego area up into the L.A. Basin. And you go a little bit further north, you hit the Central Valley then where the main commercial growing region is. So it's just a matter of time before they start to see the disease show up in those commercial groves.
How is it here? I mean, I know we were talking about it. We have it in the commercial groves, definitely. How likely is it that people that have, you know, maybe an orange tree in their backyard or a lemon tree in their backyard here in Florida, how likely is it that they may have some greening also happening?
I think the majority of backyard trees that I have seen here in Florida have citrus greening disease. The few exceptions have been further north when you get up in the Panhandle. Or Jacksonville area, there's less greening up that way. But we did a survey a number of years ago, probably 2007, 2008, looking at dooryard trees in the peninsular area of Florida. And there might have been a handful of trees we found that weren't infected. But by and large, almost all dooryard trees probably have the disease now. So homeowners who see their trees declining, they're not as productive as they used to be. They've got some weird leaf patterns. They're not solid dark green. There's a good chance that they've got citrus greening in their tree.
Is there anything you can do when you have citrus greening? I mean, if you put more fertilizer on it to try to help those impacted roots, I mean, can they even absorb it?
Well, yes, they can absorb it, but you have to adjust how you do that fertilization. And that's been one of the big focuses of our research on how to care for trees that are affected with citrus greening. Because you've lost 30 or 40% or more of the root system, if you go and put out the typical rate of fertilizer on the soil, not all of it can be taken up right at once. And so you also risk some of that being wasted. And so one of the areas of focus that we've been looking at recently in our research has been how we need to adjust our grove management practices to properly care for these greening-affected trees. And so what that means is applying the right amount of fertilizer when needed. So instead of large doses of fertilizer, growers are finding out that they use lower doses of fertilizer more frequently throughout the year, and so they're actually spoon-feeding the trees and giving them just what they need at that time, what they can take up, so it actually saves fertilizer use and provides what the trees need to stay productive.
So, and if you did put the normal amount of fertilizer, do you run the risk of burning roots or anything?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much you're going to burn the roots, but you're just not going to have it taken up by the trees.
It's
you're
going
to have some wasted fertilizer. It's excess money that growers don't need to spend, especially at a time when they're having a hard time making money
exactly.
And staying in business.
So the legislature funded 12 projects through the Citrus Initiative Program for starters. What is the Citrus Initiative Program?
Okay, so the Citrus Initiative Program, this is funded through state legislative allocations, and this really goes back decades where funding has been provided to the University of Florida to work on projects that are of importance to the citrus industry, to things that are critical needs at that time to help support our state's citrus industry, which is our iconic crop here in Florida, our main ag crop.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back probably, say, 15, 20 years ago, the types of things that were being funded were pests like Diaprepes root weevil, which was one of the major insect pests at the time causing problems throughout Florida, citrus canker, the eradication program that's taking place. There was a lot of work done finding ways to control canker more effectively. And also there was a lot of effort put into mechanical harvesting at the, a decade or so ago.
Yeah.
Because of the issues with shortages of labor. So those are the types of things that were being funded 15 years ago. Since citrus screening or HLB has shown up in the state, we've really reallocated all those funding, all that funding from the state legislature to focus just on HLB, because that is obviously the limiting factor now, what's really affecting our industry. And so we have taken the money for the past 10 years or so and really focused on trying to find solutions to HLB. And a lot of times our citrus researchers, the programs are funded through national competitive grants or other sources, but sometimes they don't have the funding. There's some critical needs that are out there that are important to growers, and sometimes those aren't funded through these national competitive grants because the programs are deemed to be too Florida-specific. And so that's where these citrus initiative funds come in, where they're extremely important because it allows us to take some topics that otherwise we can't find funding for and allocate money for those special projects that are going to provide a direct impact for the Florida growers here. And so that's really how we're using these funds. A lot of the projects that were funded in this past round were more short-term projects, things that within the 1 or 2 year completion of the project, we might have things that can be used by growers right now to help sustain their production. And then we also have funded a smaller amount of projects also that are more long-term, but trying to get some preliminary information to help allow these researchers to get the national competitive grants to get to do these long-term projects that will help provide the long-term solutions for HLB.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining the show, we're learning about research efforts into solutions for citrus greening, which has sharply reduced the amount of citrus grown in Florida since it was first spotted here in 2005. I'm talking with Dr. Michael Rogers. He's a statewide director of citrus programs and director of the Citrus Research and Education Center at UF IFAS's Lake Alfred site. If you'd like to ask him a question or make a comment, give us a call. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. We were talking a little bit earlier about one of the studies that you all have been working on, and it says you're saying that people need to use a lesser amount of fertilizer and changing those fertilizer recommendations, spoon feeding it, like you said. And as you know, we're down here in Southwest Florida, we're experiencing a significant amount of water woes, which a lot of people are looking at agriculture as the reason for fertilizer runoff. And I'm wondering, where does citrus fit into the overall agricultural scene as far as the amount of fertilizer that may be running off of fields?
Well, I think the message is positive for citrus because our growers are very concerned about saving money and providing what's needed for the trees. So I think in the past, at least the past 5 or 6 years, we've probably dropped the amount of fertilizer use in these large doses, and we've scaled back to providing only what's needed for the trees. And so that's not only beneficial for the citrus grower who's trying to save money, but it definitely prevents that runoff and issues like that. So I think that in terms of other environmental concerns, the growers in Florida are doing a very good job of managing the nutrient balance in the trees and in their groves, so we don't see those types of problems originating from citrus.
It just sounds like good news down here, sitting here right now, to use less fertilizer. What kind of fertilizer is used on citrus?
Well, there's a number of different ways fertilizers are used. There's granular fertilizers, some foliar fertilizers, depending on what the trees need. Growers need to adjust their fertilization programs based on what the trees need at that time. There's been a lot of interest in using controlled-release fertilizers, and those are things that don't release the fertilizer all at once. It's slowly released in these granular forms over time so the trees can take it up and you don't get that leaching. So those are all approaches that are being used now that make it much more efficient use of fertilizer than we did, 10 or 15 years ago.
Has your research team, have you guys ever, had a control grove of, I'm sure you have because you're scientists, but had a control grove of just an organic bunch that you don't put anything on at all? How do those trees do?
Well, even organic citrus groves still use fertilizer. They'll use different sources for fertilization. It might be you know, manures or other sources, compost, things like that. So, because if you just didn't put any type of fertilization at all on the trees, you're not going to get a crop that you can sell. You're just, the trees will suffer.
You get like two oranges.
Most of our soils here in Florida are very sandy and they're not very nutrient rich.
Yeah.
So there has to be something added to those. So even in organic citrus production, there are soil amendments that have to be added to grow those trees.
And those soil amendments can also run off, just like anything else.
I think if in general, if they're over-applied, there could be issues. But generally, I think our growers do a very good job of not over-fertilizing, just because it's too expensive to do so.
This is like throwing your money down the, you know, down the drain, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Another research project is called Citrus Under Protective Screen, or CUPS, which is basically kind of growing citrus trees inside a sort of a greenhouse or maybe a tent. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? I mean, does that protect them from these psyllids?
Yes, there's been a lot of interest, especially among the fresh fruit growers, in growing citrus in these screenhouses. And so some of the first prototype screenhouses were put up both here in Lake Alfred and also at our IPAS station in Fort Pierce, where we have about, and at least in our demonstration trials, we have 1 acre of trees under screen. And so the idea is with the screen prevents the psyllids from coming in contact with the trees and infecting those trees. Now, you can probably guess, when you put up a screen structure, that there's a lot of added cost to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So really, this is not a solution for your processing fruit that goes for juice. It has to be high-dollar fresh fruit. So things like maybe grapefruit, your tangerines, navel oranges, things like that, specialty fruit that goes that you'd buy at the supermarket.
Yeah.
And it works very well. We've had excellent success growing trees in that under screen. And so we've seen a number of growers are starting to develop these structures, you know, maybe 10, 15-acre structures just for growing fresh fruit. The problems, obviously, that exist with that, one of the main ones we dealt with this year with Irma was a hurricane.
Oh, just really blow them away.
Yes.
Yeah.
So our structure here in Lake Alfred, we suffered minor damage, but I know there's some growers who have suffered a lot more damage further south to their screen structures. So that's one of the other drawbacks. But in general, apart from having any hurricanes, the structures do very well and for growing fresh fruit under screen.
What about efforts to produce citrus trees that are resistant to greening? Is this kind of, now we're getting into the lab, I would imagine, and doing some DNA work or genetic work. Is there anything going on that way?
Oh, yeah. There's many projects looking at developing new citrus varieties, both through conventional breeding and then also through genetic modification, especially gene editing. And so in the conventional breeding side of things, we've had projects going for decades now, developing, crossing different citrus varieties in the field. It takes, you know, probably 10 years to grow up a new variety and test it in the field. Our plant breeders have produced a number of new different rootstocks and scions or varieties recently that have shown increased tolerance to HLB. And there's a lot more stuff coming down the road. I mean, it's not stuff that's available to growers right now, but in the years to come, there'll be even more things that come out through the conventional breeding program that will be very useful for growers.
Yeah, I think everybody's looking for that silver bullet. You know, they're looking for the one thing they can plant that they're sure that in a few years they're going to have a stable, reliable crop.
Yeah, and so the closest thing to a silver bullet, and it's definitely not there, but we have some fresh fruit variety that we've released. It's known as Sugar Bell. And again, that's a fresh fruit variety. It's not for juice oranges, but it holds up very well under citrus screening. So we've seen a lot of growers, an increase in the planting of Sugar Bell in the past several years. And so that's one way that growers can diversify a little bit, get into fresh fruit to provide some additional income. But down the road, you know, we have some new rootstock sign combinations for juice oranges that are showing promise. And so then those are continued to be developed through the conventional breeding program. Mm-hmm. But then also you mentioned earlier in the lab, gene editing is something that's also showing a lot of promise, where we can actually go in and modify the genes. We say, okay, here's the gene responsible for causing disease in citrus. Just simply go in and do something like delete that gene, and then you have a tree that's resistant to greening. That work's underway. We think we've identified some potential genes that are responsible for HLB, but it's still going to take a number of years before you can validate that in field trials to show that these trees really will hold up and are resistant to greening. So we've got a lot of hope for the gene editing work, but there's still years worth of field evaluations to go before we can say that we have that or not.
Yeah, that gene editing is interesting because, I mean, you may not, it may do something else too that's kind of vital to the tree actually growing. Maybe it has more than one role.
Yeah, and so that's why you have to field test these trees, because just because they show resistance in the greenhouse and in our labs doesn't mean that that's going to hold up when you get to the field. So that's the step we're in now, is taking these plants to the field to evaluate, do they hold up, do they produce fruit like we expect, is the fruit quality good? And so that takes a number of years, because from the time you plant the tree, you have to wait probably 3 years at least before you start to get fruit so you can make those evaluations.
That was my next question, how long does it take? This is not a soybean. It's not going to be
Right, that's the problem we're dealing with, and it's because we're talking about a long-lived perennial tree. So we can't just get the yields 1 year and make changes and go for the next year. It takes multiple years of evaluation to find out, does the tree grow like we expect, so the growers can have confidence to invest their money in planting that new variety.
So are you going to be in town on Wednesday and Thursday at the 2018 Citrus Expo? It's happening in Fort Myers?
Yes, it's going to be a great event. We've got a very big program scheduled this year. Starting in the afternoon of the first day, Wednesday, August 15th, at 2 o'clock, we begin our IFAS educational session on citrus. And so that day is particularly is dedicated to insect pest management or psyllid management. And then the following day on Thursday, we have a morning session, which is talking about nutrient management, other horticultural practices, citrus under protective screen, new varieties. And then the afternoon of the 16th, we have a session that's going to be talking about different therapy approaches to citrus as far as where we are in terms of whether it's nutritional means or different products that might actually have some control of the bacteria, things like that. Will be discussed in the afternoon. So we've got a very full program, and it's going to be a very good 2 days of interaction with growers and have a big trade show there as well.
So is this mainly for growers and people that are in the trade, or it's not for backyard gardeners so much?
Well, it's generally geared towards the commercial citrus grower, but we do have folks who are hobbyists or have backyard trees who are interested in the information. So we see a lot of people from different backgrounds show up, but largely it's your commercial citrus operations.
And I want to ask you one last question. If you had to point to one possible long-term solution as being the most viable, what do you think it would be? Is it going to be going against the bug? Is it going to be the support for plants that already have greening? Or is it going to be something else?
Most scientists are probably in agreement that ultimately we're looking for that tree that is resistant to citrus greening. So whether that comes from conventional breeding or gene editing, that's really the silver bullet we're looking for. And we're not there yet. So that's going to be years down the road. But right now where we are is we're developing the tools and learning how to grow citrus again in the presence of HLB. We're having to change the way we do things. And that's what's going to keep us going in the short term until we have that silver bullet in hand.
Yeah, you just got to find that rootstock that can stand up to that citrus greening and then use that as the rootstock for all the trees.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to tell you how informative this has been. I really appreciate the time that you spent talking with us, and enjoy your time in Fort Myers later this week for the Citrus Expo.
Okay, thank you very much, Julie.
That was Dr. Michael Rogers. He's the Statewide Director of Citrus Programs and Director of the University of Florida IFAS Citrus Research and Education Center in Lake Alfred. When we return from this quick break, lethal bronzing. It's a palm disease that kills trees once they've been infected, but scientists say that it can be prevented using an antibiotic. We'll find out more about that. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.